till they happen. Tales of Tomorrow, story number 11. Martians Never Die, by Lucius Daniel. This is your host, Dormentor, saying hello for ABC. What is the ideal bodyguard? The most ferocious looking, the most efficient killer, or the most devoted? On Earth, you might find a combination of all three, but he'd never be as effective in the long run as the curious creature which came back from Mars with Dr. Clyde Curtis in the year 2512. We could very soon sense the unique qualities of this pet, one Chuckle by name. The inspiration for a story in Galaxy magazine called Martians Never Die. The building is of massive stone and completely circular. And there is an inner room, a barren circle with unbroken walls, 3 feet in diameter, and entirely open to the sky at the top. The only access to it from the ground level is a door of steel, 4 inches thick, with a series of small holes drilled through the top. The outer room is a narrow passageway which completely encircles the inner chamber. There are no windows, no furnishings. The wall broken only by another door that leads to the street. A fluorescent tube gives it cold light in the narrow space between the two doors. And under it stand Hal Stern and Fay Curtis. And she looks beautiful, chunky and affluent, and they're both nervous.
I'm frightened, Hal.
No need of it.
Yes, but suppose Clyde Curtis comes back.
He hasn't come back the last 4 years, and there's no reason to think he'll come back this time. I wouldn't throw this grim place if you hadn't...
Don't, Hal.
Well, why can't you forget Clyde completely?
You can't expect me to. Not until I feel absolutely certain that he won't return.
Murray said himself, if I don't get back from Mars by the second year, he said, I'll probably never make it.
Well, it's a little thing to ask. To wait for 15 minutes once a year.
It's a lot to ask, considering the way I feel about you. Now, let's have an end to this nonsense. Let's have him declared legally dead, and then we can get married. Who are you?
I'm from the Telegram.
So, they're sending cub reporters now.
I'm no cub. I've been with them a whole year.
You're a little early. Wait outside.
What time is he supposed to come back?
At 3:44:29, if he comes.
How can you spot the exact second that way?
But because that's the time when the solar currents are the most favorable.
Once a year, huh?
Yes, that's right.
You're Mrs. Curtis, aren't you?
I am.
Say, you know the principle on which Dr. Curtis got to Mars? I mean, it sounds like fourth-dimensional stuff to me.
Well, it's not fourth-dimensional, and I'm afraid it's too complicated to explain.
Hey, didn't you get a little sore? Doctor taking off for another planet that way and leaving you behind?
That's an impertinent question if I ever heard one.
You're Mr. Stern, aren't you?
I am.
And you helped Dr. Curtis finance this Mars project, huh?
I have been his friend and financial advisor for many years, yes.
Is that all?
What do you mean by that?
Yes, sir. Hey, where does that other door go to?
To the projection room.
Could I take a look inside?
A diesel tractor couldn't pull that door open.
Well, how'll the dog get out if he does come back?
It opens by pneumatic pressure. The sphere will come into the projection chamber at tremendous speed. Air compression will open the door and act as a cushion for the sphere at the same time.
Is it those little holes at the top of the door are part of the system, huh?
Yes, the air will come through those holes with a whistling sound.
Gives you a little warning, huh?
That sounds very much like an insinuation that I don't...
Oh, please, thanks.
Hey, what's that noise?
Hell!
The air pressure.
He is back.
Oh, brother, I get a break.
There they stand, all three faces, and with fascination as the heavy steel door is slowly and noiselessly forced open. The cub reporter of the glow with his good fortune has stumbled into a major story. The lady lady contemplates a husband she had never expected to see again. Mr. Stern is our man. For reasons of his own, Mr. Stern has not wanted Dr. Curtis to reappear, and the fascination on his face is mixed with other emotions. He is saying to himself,
"It can't make any difference. It must."
Steel door stands wide now. The rush of compressed air is receding. The gray power of the sphere is sinking slowly into view. Comes to rest on the floor, the projection of the window. And the Stern's hat swings outward directly behind the steel door. It's the moment when Dr. Curtis should appear, but there is no immediate sign of him. There is only this creature slithering through the hat.
Oh, what is it?
Now move back, Faye. What if it's a jump?
It's a Martian. It must be a Martian.
Well, look at Clyde. Something happened.
Oh, no.
No, it's not. I mean, look. There's Dr. Curtis behind us.
Clyde?
Hey, look out for the thing.
Look out!
It's all right. Behaves like a dog.
Where have you been, darling? Why did you stay so long?
Later, Faye. We'll talk about it later.
Are you ill?
No, but I must rest. Take me home.
How about a word for the press, Doctor? Can you tell me about that thing?
I'll have a good many words for the press, son, later.
Oh, not even a statement?
Don't worry. I'll see that you're given due credit for your patience.
Have you, got a word for an old friend, Clyde?
Oh, hello, Al. Hello.
If you move that beast out of the way, I'd like to shake hands.
A shopkeeper won't bother you. He'll never bother any friend of mine. I must get home, though. Please, Faye, help me to the car.
Dislike has already formed between Stern and the beast. Russell has been steadily eyeing the old friend and financial advisor. Stern's scalp developed a chronic tingling sensation. There's a strong leather odor as the creature brushes past Stern and the lump to the door. The thing is built in the manner of a frog, except it stands 5 feet high while squatting on its powerful haunches. And the feet are different, too. You can feather the suction cups like those of monsters. Stern is filled with loathing as he follows its grotesque form through the door. Imagine his state of mind as he finds himself sharing the rear seat of the car with it. Things grew worse for Stern as they arrived at Curtis' home. Faye appears not to notice him at all. Her attention is entirely centered on Clyde.
Faye.
Please don't bother me now, Hal. I'm fixing some soup for Clyde.
You'll have the soup. Listen to me. We've got to find time for a little private discussion.
About what?
About us, of course. About what we have to do now that Clyde is back.
What we have to do is take care of him. He's sick and mutant.
Well, so do I.
I'm sorry, Hal. That's the way it is.
Suppose I just tell him the way things have been between us.
Well, I think that Clyde would understand.
You don't know Clyde.
Oh, please, Hal. I will stay with him and look after him as long as he wants me. You can handle the situation according to your own standards.
You bet I will.
Meanwhile, you might cooperate until Dr. Anderson gets here and we find out how sick he really is. You certainly couldn't think of bothering him now.
Well, the lady's leaving Mr. Stern flat. He's smoldering. Oh, one hardly feels sympathy for him. He's old enough to know that even Lloyds of London will not ensure the affections of a woman. But now he turns, quite naturally, if you like, to thoughts of Nahum. If Clyde lacked the common courtesy to get lost in the void, then he, Mr. Stern, will have to put him out of the way. This will have to be done before Clyde gets around to revoking the power of attorney he has thoughtfully delegated to his old friend. So, the decision is made and immediately becomes irrevocable in Mr. Stern's mind. It is only a question of how. With what a strength. splendid sense of determination can a man will himself to destruction. Mr. Stern felt in the kitchen for a time, but he is attracted back to the living room by a strong clamor and finds himself facing the awesome consequence of fame, public attention. The press and the curious ones have beaten a path to the door of the man who not only got to Mars, but made it back. If Dr. Curtis' life should depend on rest and quiet, he will have a little chance to live.
Al, will you please take care of those people at the door? It's impossible to hear yourself speak.
I don't think there are more than 250. So I take a chair and drive them away.
Well, at least make them stop pounding on the door. Why must people be so inhuman?
I'll do what I can.
Will they go away?
No, I don't think so. Clyde is new.
All right, then I'm going to call the police.
The police won't drive away the press.
Oh, can't they stop that? Clyde is so weak he can hardly take this seat.
Open up in there. It's Dr. Anderson.
Oh, thank heaven. Let him in, Hal, quickly.
It would help if you calmed your own nerves a little.
Come, Stern, take off the chain bolt.
Just making sure you're not a reporter, Doctor.
Now, where's Clyde?
He's over there in the chair, Dr. Anderson. I'm afraid he'll have to be taken to a hospital.
No hospital.
Why not?
Well, this condition is only temporary.
How do you know? Are you an M.D.? Hey, open this shirt all the way. I'll get my stethoscope out. What have you done to yourself to get in this condition, Clyde? This thing here. Get it out of my way.
It's all right, Chester. It's all right. Dr. Anderson is a friend.
Well behaved, even if it does look a fright. Here now, let's listen to the pump.
I'm afraid there's a sound, Doctor. The difference in gravity between Mars and Earth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that awful crowd outside. It comes with a crack in the floor.
Be quiet.
Well, there's nothing wrong, Andy. The Latinays told me exactly what to expect and what to do.
Latinays? Never heard of them.
They're the intelligent race on Mars. Quite similar to men, but smaller.
What is this thing with the Martians?
Oh, Shepard and his breed are used as pests.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we are. These Latinays, any doctors among them?
Well, they're incredibly advanced in ways we'd never suspect. They told me I'd feel this way and that rest would be the only cure.
Well, why aren't you in bed then?
Rest, I said, not collapse. Matter of fact, I should be taking a little walk soon.
Nothing seriously wrong. I'll leave some pills. But Faye's thing, he doesn't take more than one every 3 hours.
Are they powerful?
Yes. Quite powerful. They'll have him back to normal in a couple of days. Call me if I'm wrong.
I'll let you out, Doctor.
Oh, are you staying here, Stern?
Yes, and don't worry. We'll see Clyde get plenty of attention.
You better support him if he's set on taking that stroll. Right now, that heart is working pretty hard.
I'll walk him out and back and let him sit by the ravine.
Things are progressing nicely for Mr. Stern. Dr. Anderson has unknowingly provided the method for murder. The police arrive and inform all that they are quarantined until health inspectors have examined Dr. Curtis. Thus, no interruption. The crowds continue to mill about in the street, maintaining an air of confusion. There remains only Shuttle. And that creature must be disposed of before Stern can deal with its master. Mr. Stern concentrates on the problem and examines the monster carefully. Now, how would it defend itself? It has no teeth and therefore no bite. A creature of his size would hardly be equipped with a sting. Haunches and arms look powerful, and the suction cups on its fingers would make a grip difficult to break. On the other hand, it must have a thin skull, adjusted to the slight atmospheric pressure of mine. The beast returns his stare malevolently.
and inches closer to his master, Dr. Curtis. It is somehow aware of Stern's intent. Curtis dozes in his chair, and Stern waits for him to waken. Waits until after dark.
You're awake, Clyde.
Yes. I think so. What am I? Serious. I feel as though I've been in a trance.
That's the way you look.
What time is it?
Around 8.
Oh, I must move about. The matinee's told me to move about where I've had trouble with my legs.
I'll help you. If your beast will let me.
Shepherd, let him support me.
Well, certainly keeps a close watch on you.
Amazing creature in many ways. I'll just lean on your shoulder, Hal.
Did I hear voices? Ah. Are you sure it's all right to move around?
It's necessary, my dear.
Well, where are you going?
Out to the garden. Is that all right, Clyde?
Well, it is.
But it's cool out there, and your old bench is still at the edge of the ravine.
It'll be pleasant to sit there again and contemplate the stars. Are the stars out?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, then, darling, go ahead. I'm just fixing something for Hal and me to eat.
I'm about ready for a little food. Don't let anyone stop you, Faye.
Stars are uncovered. Perfectly clear sky. Dr. Curtis moves slowly to his bench by the ravine and looks up as though in meditation. Mr. Stern continues to stand facing him, and the beast carefully takes up a position between its master and the yawning ravine, falling abruptly away into the night. Chuckle fixes an adoring gaze on Dr. Curtis and sits motionless. Even as Stern moves nervously about.
Why'd you stay on Mars so long, Clyde?
I wanted to learn as much as I could. I found out that their civilization has advanced at least 1,000 years beyond our own. And there's no violence of any kind. Crime is unknown.
How can that be possible?
The psychopathic criminal is treated for his disease. And there is no poverty to create crime in general. As for the power seekers, there is no power to seek since the government is not governed. And they don't even have money. Their needs are produced in abundance. An individual merely presents a service card to take all he requires.
You mean to say that nobody on Mars ever gets cleaned up and swaddled his wife?
It might happen. But the one who's killed dies only in body. His mind and spirit will be transmigrated into the body of the attacker, and the criminal is transformed into his own victim.
Well, that you'll never have people believing unless you're able to show how it's done and give demonstrations.
Unfortunately, I can't do that. The Latinos were free with their explanations, but they were beyond me. Don't ask me to talk anymore, Hal. Making me very tired.
Oh, I'm sorry, Clyde. Well, you rest up a little. I'll just move around for a while and soak up the breeze.
Dr. Curtis is slumping back in his seat almost gracefully. In a moment, he is staring fixedly at the stars. Shuffle is apparently filled with anxiety for his master and watches him even more intently. Mr. Stern is pleased to note that nothing he does seems distracting to the beast. After walking about the carriage for a bit, he moves close to Shuffle. The creature, taking no heed, Mr. Stern picks up a rock and tosses it into the ravine. The creature is unmoved. Mr. Stern picks up another rock, a larger one, and again makes as though to throw it into the ravine, but he suddenly reverses his motion and brings it down crushingly on the back of the creature's head. Shuffle makes no sound, and a slight push topples the creature backward into the ravine. One of the beasts has fallen over the edge. And besides, the law can't punish a man for killing a non-human. quite satisfied with himself, Mr. Stone leaves Dr. Curtis and his friends and stores to find Faye and the system.
Well, you didn't leave Clyde out there by himself.
Stop sitting between him and the room, Clyde. Smoothly, yes.
Oh, all right. I'm just getting a light supper here. It's nearly ready.
I've been talking with Clyde about Mars.
Does it sound like a nice place to visit?
It sounds like utopia. Clyde's fascinated with it.
Oh, I'm sure all about it.
Then
you're feeling better.
I wouldn't be surprised if he'll go back after a while.
What?
Now, I can't blame the guy if he found the perfect place to live.
Oh? Was there any mention of taking me along?
Hmm? No, you didn't get into conversation at
all. Hal, you're not just making this up.
A lot of good that would do me if he didn't actually get up and go.
Well, if he is thinking of returning, and after being away for 5 years...
Look, Faye, I understand how you feel about a man like Clyde. He's pretty phenomenal compared with me, and, well, I've talked myself into being a good loser, so will you remember that I'm always available?
I'll keep it very clearly in mind. Along with this idea of a return trip, which is apparently circulating in Clyde's head.
Well, that's all I ask.
Be honest, steady now. Are you sure that Clyde is all right out there?
You needn't worry about anything happening to him with that chuckle standing guard.
Oh. What's the matter? Did he cut the thread?
I must put my finger on a thorn. Things like fury.
Oh, well, you'll find something in Clyde's laboratory. But please hurry, or the ominous being.
Oh, never mind. The sting isn't going to kill me. Let's eat.
Now the stage is completely set. Our Mr. Stern is reminding himself not to become overconfident. But progress is progress, and he can't help an inward snicker at the way things are going. Just go late with the thief, lies at the bottom of the ravine, as the bruise of the pride has been planted in Fay by Stern, and the overdose of heart stimulant he will administer to his old friend and the jigger of brandy will do the rest. You see, the sting in Stern's fingers given him a moment's worry because it did not come from any rose bush, but he is started at the moment he put petrol into the ravine. Oh, the monster must have caught its finger for a fraction of a second with one of its suction cups. So Stern is now busy self-mentally cooking a pot pot as he attacks the omelette with relish. Their supper out of the way, he and Fay help Dr. Curtis back to his chair in the living room. Stern's arm is around Clyde's shoulder, and he actually feels a surge of warmth towards his old friend. Warmth and pity. Because what has to be done must be done. Stern eases the doctor into the chair with a fond smile and a thoroughly affectionate pat on his shoulder. He then stands back to appraise the sick man carefully.
Well, you certainly don't look any worse. Don't you sleep, eh?
If only I didn't feel so weak.
Oh, something I completely forgot.
Forgot to do what?
Dr. Landis told me when he was leaving, Clyde is supposed to have a little brandy in between those pills.
No, I think not.
Oh, but darling, if your own physician orders it.
Think of it, man. You haven't had a shot of your favorite brand for 5 years, and here you're ordered to take it.
Oh, very well.
Yes, I'll fix it. There's a bottle in the cabinet here.
Seems to know your way around the house quite well, Hal.
Oh, I had to stop around occasionally to keep an eye on your wife, you know, and she made me mix my own drink.
I think I would have given you up for lost if it hadn't been for Hal, darling.
I am deeply grateful to both of you for waiting me out. I fully expected to have Shuttle as the only friend left to me.
Oh, you make a much more lasting impression than that.
Where is Shuttle?
Now, didn't the thing come in with us?
Apparently not.
I'll look in the garden.
Last I saw, was sitting beside you at his back to the ravine.
You don't suppose it could have slipped over the edge?
Take your brandy, old friend.
Put it on the table here, Carl.
Fine. Gonna join you if you don't mind.
You're welcome to all you want.
Why? We need some of the chocolate in the garden.
Well, then he must have toppled over the edge.
Yes. The only thing that would keep him away from me. Would you mind, Hal, taking a light out there and having a look in the ravine?
No, not now. I don't want to leave you.
You don't want to leave me?
No, I'd stick around and see if nothing happens to my old friend.
Well, you didn't look in at that dandy bottle.
The first today is happening.
Well, is there anything wrong? Did you feel all right?
It's perfectly wonderful, except...
Except what?
Except that old prick in my finger.
Well, it might be infected. You better let me know.
No, it's nothing.
Oh, it is infected. The whole thing's infected.
Let me see how.
Nothing, I tell you, Clyde. Never give me a moment's thought, understand?
Oh, shucks, yes. He would come back with me.
Now, you forget about Shockwell. All hell will see nothing ever happens to you. All Shockwell is dead.
Martian never die.
What do you mean by that, Clyde?
How do you feel now?
Long down the side of me.
That long as he turned hand. I'm going to call Dr. Anderson.
I don't believe Dr. Anderson can help me. Al, listen to me. Can you understand what I'm saying? Al, how do you feel toward me?
Most noble, great man, like me. Except that you're
me. What's that over me? He's acting excited at your feet there, as Shapto did.
So, you killed Shapto, Hal.
Why, will you tell me what's happening to Hal? Look at him.
It's no longer Hal, my dear. But Shapto in Hal's form. I went as far as to tell him straight out that a murdered Martian never really dies. No. Not even their animals.
And besides, he was never happier than now, sitting at the feet of his master,
adoring the great man, ready to sacrifice his own life to keep his beloved friend from harm. But our tale ends quite cheerfully, after all. Surprise?
It, Martians Never Die by Lucius Daniel, thanks to Galaxy Magazine, now on the stand. Next week, another Tale of Tomorrow out of Galaxy Magazine called The Girls from Earth by Frank M. Robinson, in which is dramatized the unique adventures of a pair of earthbound lovelies who seek romance and find it somewhere beyond the planet. So this is your host, Omentor, saying, until next week, then, don't stray too far from the phone, girls. You know, there might be such a thing as an interplanetary phone call. Good night.
Tales of Tomorrow. Heard in tonight's play were Leslie Wood, Leon Janney, George Petrie, Lynn Cook, and your host, Omentor, Raymond Edward Johnson. Special effects by Ed Blaney and Bob Prescott, engineer Joe Durante. Music composed and conducted by Bobby Christian. Script adaptation by Don Whitty. Production and direction by Warren Somerville.